Hello, and welcome to my podcast, John Scott Lawton's English You Know. In this eighth episode of my audiobook, Forever in Florence, we cover chapters 43 to 48. The odd-numbered chapters, 43, 45 and 47, cover Isabella's journey as she makes her way to Milan for the Bob Dylan concert, and chapters 44, 46 and 48 follow Francesca as she releases Michelangelo from his confinement and takes him to Fiesole, where she hopes he'll be safe. If you wish to make any comments on the audiobook, please do so using the Spotify app or contacting me by email, johnscottlawton@hotmail.co.uk. Thank you very much indeed. Chapter 43. The night air was finally beginning to feel a little cooler as they got into their taxi, helped by the air conditioning, which had obviously kept the driver alive in the earlier city heat. "Who's the first drop off this time?" asked David politely. "Me," insisted Isabella. "But I want you to come in for a drink. It's not even midnight yet." "Fine, thank you," said David, rather surprised but nonetheless pleased. David noted that they were still holding hands as they navigated the way slowly through the busy city streets. Cars had no place in this city, and pedestrians knew it. Eventually, they made their way to the drop-off point at the end of the small alleyway leading down towards Isabella's home. No cars could make it down there, so Isabella had to gently and carefully guide David down the length of the passage and into her small courtyard garden. "Do you have an olive tree here?" he asked as he closed the heavy gate behind her. "I think I can smell nearly ripe olives." "Yes, it's just here in the centre of the courtyard. I think it's hundreds of years old, and it still produces masses of fruit every year," explained Isabella. "That's nice. Do you produce oil from it?" asked David. "Oh yes, it tastes remarkable. It's unusual to have such a tree in the city, but I'm very blessed. It's just the one." Isabella warned David about the dogs, but she needn't have worried, as they seemed to sense David's vulnerability, both in terms of his lack of sight and his injured hand. "This is Rosa, and this is Luna. They are sisters and very frisky. Be good, girls, no jumping up." David patted them and sat down at the heavy kitchen table to stroke their heads affectionately. Luna lay down on top of David's feet, while Rosa circled the kitchen table, searching for a toy to bring to David for him to play with her. "They are still puppies, really, but they are good fun and quite obedient. I love having them," said Isabella. "Would you like a glass of wine or a beer? I have some shorts as well, if you prefer," asked the host. "I don't suppose you have any dark rum, do you? And a splash of Coke or something? I've just got a taste for some." "It must be all that salsa dancing," explained David. "You're in luck. I've got a bottle of navy rum here that someone gave me at Christmas, and I'm sure I've got a bottle of Coke somewhere," said Isabella. Isabella poured herself a glass of Chianti and sat at the kitchen table with her guest. "Would you like to come into the living room?" she offered. "It's a bit more comfortable in there." "Sure, lead on," said David. Isabella sat David down on the large couch and went to put on some music. "What music would you like, David? Something soft or something with a bit of volume?" "Something a bit gentler than we've had tonight, if you don't mind. My ears are still ringing from the band. They were good, but a bit on the loud side." "Sure. Is Bob Dylan okay? I'm going to see him in Milan in a couple of weeks, and I want to start myself getting psyched up for it. I've seen him loads of times, but every time is so special. I like to start getting myself ready weeks in advance." The excitement in Isabella's voice was palpable. As Isabella played her favourite albums, David listened intently to the tracks, some of which he knew, others of which were less familiar to him. At times, Isabella sang along, conducting proceedings with her glass raised into the air, almost oblivious to David's presence, and at others she asked David if he knew the track or the album it was from. It was turning into some kind of challenge or quiz. "I just find his lyrics so meaningful and deep. You can feel his lived experience in every song. You get a sense of what he has been through, or what he wants to say to you in every line. It's that depth and sense of meaning that I like. He's a poet, really. The music is almost redundant sometimes. But of course, it's an essential element of what he wants to communicate. I love it," Isabella enthused. "I just love him, and I love his music so much." After several more drinks and no indication that Isabella wanted David to leave, the pair found themselves half falling asleep in the dreamy atmosphere of the comfortable space. Isabella lay with her head on David's chest while he caressed her hair, gently stroking it with his good hand, while he tried to keep his right hand as still as possible. Isabella could feel the strength in his chest muscles as his breath rose and fell in his lungs. She felt his strong arms and found her mouth reaching up voluntarily to his, the movement natural and sincere. They kissed, gently at first, as their lips and then their fuller mouths explored each other. By now, David's left hand surrounded her long neck and held her there, secure and still while his mouth tasted the skin on her face, then ears, then neck. Isabella's fingers found their way inside David's open neck shirt, and she stroked his chest willingly, feeling again the breath rising and falling, calmly and rhythmically. David's left hand moved from Isabella's neck to her blouse and undid her top buttons. His fingers then entered the opening and started to explore her adorable breasts, at first over and then inside her bra. The passionate kissing continued as the pair enjoyed each other's smell, taste and touch. Isabella's hand grabbed David's long, curly hair as she responded to his delicate touch with soft, whimpering noises that at first attracted the attention of the dogs, but then they seemed to sense that all was well, and the dogs settled back down into their dog baskets, content to know that nothing was amiss with their mistress. After many minutes exploring each other's now partially clothed bodies, Isabella was the first to break away from the close embrace, but only to say, "David, shall we take this to the bedroom?" "I'd like that," said David. "That sounds like a good idea." Chapter 44. The morning sun eased its way into the dense city streets as Francesca walked the dogs by the river. They were well behaved and came to her when she called them to come to shake themselves dry at the water's edge. Her mission today was simple: to get her master Michelangelo Buonarroti out into the safety of the countryside with as little fuss as possible, and to settle him into Antonio's grandfather's farm buildings for protection. Collecting some bread on the way home, she spotted what she thought was a pool of blood at the bottom of the stone wall to the side of her property, but tried her best to ignore it. At least she knew that the soldier was still alive, from what the baker's son had said, but there was still a risk that he might tell someone in authority about what he had seen in the Medici chapel. They were not out of danger yet. The baker had said nothing of the night's events when she had seen him in the bakery, so she assumed that they were sworn to secrecy too. She realised how many people she had who cared for her and who would do anything to protect Michelangelo. He was well respected in this city, even though it was not the place of his birth. She wondered whether it would be better to return him to Caprese, but then thought that that would be too obvious to some, and they might still go looking for him there. No, she was sure that Fiesole would be a safe place for him now, and she would turn her attention to restoring his reputation with the Medici family, so that he could be forgiven for his supposed misdemeanours and be allowed to get on with his important work. She felt sure the church would help him, as he was still respected there for his faith and for the good works he had done for the Pope and his church leaders. Michelangelo was still asleep as she reached home. He must have been exhausted, she thought. She sat looking at him for several minutes, his hair matted and messy, his beard overlong, and his clothes a stinking pile on the floor. She must get him some new clothes, she thought, and the only man she could think of that was his size was the neighbouring baker. Leaving the dogs in charge of guarding her master, she ran next door and asked the baker to lend her some of his older shirts and a couple of pairs of old trousers. Surprisingly, he got his wife to bring these down from the living quarters above the shop with no questions as to what she wanted them for. Perhaps his son had said something after all about seeing her with an older gentleman the night before. If he knew, he still wasn't saying. Perhaps some people could be trusted in this city after all. As Francesca returned home, she could hear gentle movement within the house. Luna came to see her at the kitchen door while Rosa stayed with Signor Buonarroti to make sure he came to no harm. "Good morning, Signor Buonarroti," she said. "Did you sleep well?"
"I did, my dear, thank you. It's the first decent night's sleep I've had in a long time. May I wash? I see you brought me some clean clothes to wear. I need those," he said.
"Yes, they are not new, but they are clean, and they will be perfect for our journey today. Do you feel ready?" "It will be some time after lunch when the market has finished," explained Francesca.
"Yes, I'm ready, my dear, I'm ready. I need to move from Firenze for now. It is not safe for me here, as we can see."
"Indeed," she said. "So today we will change that and make sure you're safe and you can carry on your important work. Roberto tells me there are some quarries near the village. Perhaps you can visit those whilst you're there on the farm."
"Yes, yes. I like to see stone in its natural habitat, so that I can see how it was formed and where the structural weak points might be. I get a vision of the sculptures in the stone, and I like to work from there. There is something very natural and normal about the process of carving then, I find."
"I'm glad the interest in your work has not waned, despite your isolation. Perhaps you can do some drawing too and be inspired to write some of your beautiful poetry," Francesca added.
"We will see, child. We will see."
Francesca needed to go to work to maintain a sense of normality, but she was scared that the tall soldier may have reported back to his captain something of the previous night's events and the discovery of Michelangelo. So she was in two minds about what to do for the best. She decided it was safer not to go to her office at the court, but to send word that she was ill and to take the day off. She called the young boy from across the street and gave him a scribbled note to explain her absence. He was happy to run to the court to deliver it in exchange for some of the freshly baked bread she had just collected from the bakery.
"Michelangelo, what we must do now is just sit and wait and expect word from my friend Maria Elena that Roberto and Giuseppe have left the market and for us to meet them somewhere along their route home. Is that clear to you?" asked Francesca.
"Yes, my dear, very clear. Thank you for doing all of this for me and for putting yourself at risk for doing so. I couldn't ask this of you, but I am very grateful for all your support. I truly am."
Time passed very slowly during the morning and into the afternoon. Francesca relied on the church bells nearby to tell her the time by the hour, and the gaps between the ringing of the bells seemed to her to get longer and longer. Michelangelo sat in the courtyard, grabbing some of the day's sun when he could, but staying within the confines of the house and garden. He sat with his base to the young olive tree at one point, taking in its energy and feeling its growing strength. Finally, at about 3 o'clock by Francesca's estimation, Maria Elena panted into her courtyard. "It is time," she said. "We must hurry. There appear to be a lot of soldiers about today, unless it is my imagination playing tricks on me," said Maria Elena. Francesca feared that this increased activity might have been in response to the previous night's attack on the soldier. But if that had been the case, surely they would have come to arrest her straight away. The sense of tension increased as she went inside to get Michelangelo ready for his escape. "Come, Signor Buonarroti, come. It is time." He moved as quickly as he could to collect his few things into a sack, including his newly acquired clothes, some of which he was now wearing. Rosa and Luna wanted to come too, and Francesca thought it good protection to bring them with her. Maria Elena explained that they should meet Roberto and Giuseppe near the bridge crossing a little stream just to the north of the city, directly on the route to Fiesole. It would take about an hour to get there at the slow pace at which they could walk. The two women walked either side of Michelangelo, each holding an arm for support. The dogs ran either side of Francesca or Maria Elena as the afternoon sun beat down on them. It took even more than an hour to get to the rendezvous point, as they had to stop many times for Michelangelo to catch his breath. He was certainly no longer used to walking, and the lack of movement during his weeks of isolation in the chapel had certainly not helped. The farmers were already in position with their pig cart near the bridge as arranged. "Where have you been?" questioned Roberto needlessly as he saw the state of Michelangelo, and apologized immediately for his question.
"Michelangelo, my friend, how are you? You look tired. Come and rest here. It is not very nice, but it is soft and comfortable."
The smell of the pig would linger all the way back to Fiesole, but the journey was indeed a comfortable one. Maria Elena had left them at the bridge,
but Francesca and her dogs remained. Luna and Rosa were now playing with Giuseppe's dogs, and the pairs made a natural deception for anyone wondering what the empty cart was doing, making its way back to the hills. Except it was not empty. It was carrying one of the greatest men of all time. An artist, a master, a stone carver, a genius, a man of enormous character and influence, reduced to ride in a smelly pig cart to find sanctuary. But thanks to the kindness and endeavours of his friends, most notably Francesca, and the kindness and goodness in her heart, he was safe. Safe to carry on his life's work and to achieve even greater things. Thanks to Francesca.
Chapter 45. The pair awoke to the sound of the dogs scratching at the door as usual. It was still very early in the morning, and the sunlight was barely making an impression on the city skyline, but the girls needed to be let out for their morning stretch. "Wait for me, and we can have a shower together again," said Isabella. "I've just got to let the dogs out." In her absence, David stretched out his long legs across the full width of the bed, and tried to feel the bottom of the mattress with his toes. He couldn't. He could, however, smell the familiar geranium scent which Isabella had left behind. He enjoyed it immensely, as much as he had enjoyed tasting it on her skin throughout the night. On her return, Isabella stretched across from the side of the bed to give David a full kiss on the lips. "Good morning again," she said. "Shall we have that shower?" No words were needed in reply as David allowed Isabella to safely guide him across the landing to her shower room. There they soaked each other down and explored the other's bodies again for what felt like the 100th time that night. They kissed under the running water and embraced each other closely to allow the hot steam to cascade off their backs. There was a sensual and natural closeness between them, which was unusual for a couple who had only just become so intimate. "I'll make us some breakfast. You don't know where everything is," said Isabella. "Will you be okay getting dressed and coming downstairs on your own?" "I'll be fine," assured David as he felt his way gingerly back across the landing, but without any major incident. Minutes later, he was downstairs in the kitchen, fully dressed. "What do you normally have for breakfast?" asked David. "I always have something warm, even before my orange juice, just to prepare my stomach properly for my porridge. I usually start with a cup of tea. Would you like some?" "Yes, please, that sounds nice. Do you have any fresh fruit as well?" "Yes, I'll slice some up for you," said Isabella. "What do you have on today?" "Well, I was booked for a half day of massages, but I've got to let them know I can't make it. They've been very good about it. Apparently I'm in high demand and people have been asking for me by name." "I bet they have," thought Isabella to herself. If last night's experience was an extension of what he offers on the professional massage table to the general public, she could have massages like that every night. David's touch was sublime, and in their lovemaking he had used his mouth to massage her as much as his good hand, maybe as a substitute for his injured hand. Either way, Isabella had never experienced anything like it before. She couldn't wait for the opportunity to repeat the exercise. "I'm impersonating my namesake again, this time complete with plaster cast. That should be interesting. I'll need a bit of help to get ready. I might have to call Gina." "Are you teaching tonight?" asked Isabella. "I don't think so, but I'll have to check. I usually go through my electronic calendar the night before, but I got a bit distracted last night," laughed David. "I teach a few students online, one-to-one. It pays quite well, and I don't want to let any of those students down." Isabella finished readying the breakfast, and they sat out in the courtyard under the shade of the large olive tree. Isabella looked adorable in a plain white top with a long, oversized, scarlet-red skirt, double-banded at the tight waist which showed off her curvaceous hips and elegant, slim waist. David had explored every inch of those curves last night, and Isabella looked at him with admiration for the dexterity which he had shown in balancing on his good hand to compensate for the injury to his left, which was clearly still hurting him. Neither said anything about their physical interactions and left it all to their imaginations and memory. They talked about life in Florence, Isabella's forthcoming trip to Milan to see her god, Bob Dylan, and David's hopes that his parents might come out to Italy
and bring Jonathan with them. Their conversation was smooth and natural, not stilted and false, as can sometimes happen after the first night together. Isabella couldn't stop herself thinking about Luigi, however, and how nasty he had been to David. There had been no need to be so offensive, and she couldn't remember seeing him behave like that to other men. Luigi clearly saw David as a threat, and he was right to do so. Isabella allowed herself a moment to reflect on why Luigi's opinion was so important to her, or even his presence in her life. It surprised her a little. After all she had been through with Mia and Luigi's affair, which had nearly destroyed her closest friendship, she was worried that he still exerted such an influence on her thoughts. Their own love affair had been very sexual and intense, but that alone did not explain why she considered his opinions important at all. "I'll have to give Gina a ring and ask her to come to pick me up," explained David.
"Are you sure? I could walk you into town and you could have a coffee before you start your life modelling," suggested Isabella.
"Really? Will you have time?" asked David.
"Sure. I'm not busy with anything else, first thing. Please let me take you. Perhaps Gina could come to pick you up when you're finished."
The pair cleared away the breakfast things and got ready to go out. The dogs expected a morning walk, but Isabella had to disappoint them for the time being. She promised to take them out as soon as she returned. The couple walked arm in arm back to the heart of the city, which, despite the early hour, was already very busy and somewhat noisy. The number of tourists had definitely increased over the past few weeks, and that added a new dimension to the life of the city, not always a favourable one. As they approached the Pitti Palace, a group of excited women gesticulated to Isabella to help them.
"We're looking for the entrance for the life drawing class," one giggled.
"Use this door," said Isabella, as she nodded towards the entrance to her right, "and then go up the staircase to the gallery. It should be signposted. It was when I took the class a few days ago."
"Was it any good? Was the model, attractive?" asked another.
"You're in for a special treat, ladies, I assure you. You're in for a treat," as she squeezed David's arm to guide him up the same staircase.
Chapter 46. The cart journey to Fiesole was very slow and at times painful. The constant shaking of the wheels on the part stone, part sand roadway made for an uncomfortable ride, despite the softness of the rotting straw. Michelangelo had tried to sleep as the later afternoon sun beat down on his exposed body. His makeshift straw hat lay at an angle across his face as the sun descended in the sky. Francesca sat at the side of the cart, nursed by her dogs Rosa and Luna, who lay across her legs to take their comfort and to offer it to their mistress. Giuseppe's dogs ran alongside the cart, often going ahead to make sure the path was clear, or disappearing quickly into the adjacent fields to chase and sometimes catch rabbits. They were true farm dogs. Giuseppe and Roberto sat at the front of the cart, the large white horse pulling it, needing all the encouragement they could offer her to keep going in the baking heat. At times, they would seek shade and cooler air under the narrow canopy of the large cypress trees that lined their route as they traced the availability of water in the ground. The dogs regularly ran down to the water to find their own refreshment. The overpowering smell of the pig still lingered in the straw which Michelangelo lay on, but he could also catch the smells of the fields around him as they moved slowly into the nearby hills. It was the first time, for weeks, that he had been able to take in fresh air, and despite the lingering smell of the now dead pig, he was able to enjoy the sights, sounds and smells of the journey. Francesca wore a long, flowing scarlet red dress, which elegantly mirrored her beautiful feminine shape, tight at the high waist but folding out to stretch over her womanly hips. There was a series of embroidered motifs towards the bottom of the skirt, touching the hem. Large shapes like flower petals, subtle and elegant. With it, she had on a simple white cotton blouse which clung to her skin in the heat, but, in contrast to the stench that Michelangelo had to endure, Francesca's geranium perfume masked any other smells around her as it took the warmth and essence of her skin.
Her short blonde hair bobbed and echoed in the breeze, sometimes coming over her face and sometimes falling behind her head as the direction of the wind or their travel changed. Occasionally, she stretched backwards, putting her hands behind her head and lifting her beautiful breast higher into her chest. From time to time, Giuseppe turned around to check on his precious cargo and caught Francesca in this provocative pose. He was not sure that he had ever seen anything more beautiful. From time to time as they trundled along, small children would come into view to run alongside the cart. They knew Roberto and shouted at him to greet them. He always waved at them, but told them to be careful about running directly in front of the big horse. They stopped today at a village just short of Fiesole to get some water and to give the horse some rest. An old woman was selling some oranges and lemons, and the party bought several of them to refresh themselves. Roberto knew the woman, and she asked who the man was in the rear of the cart. Roberto explained that it was his new farmhand who was coming to work for him. It was best to invent a believable and simple story that he could repeat when needed. Francesca took the opportunity to give the dogs a run and to get some water as they chased rabbits in the adjacent field. Francesca gathered some wild flowers which she thought she would give to Roberto's wife, Maria, on their arrival. She collected quite a spray of beautiful flowers of all different shades and bright colours. She had always liked picking flowers from when she was a child in the nearby mountains. It made her feel as though she was part of nature again, rather than existing in the grime and thick air of the city. Even here, just a few miles away from Florence, she could better taste the quality of the air, and the water definitely tasted more healthy and cleaner. She missed the country life and wondered whether she might move out into the countryside, at least for part of the year, leaving the dirt and filth of the ever-growing metropolis behind. Eventually, Roberto's farm came into view on top of the hill, and Francesca could report to Michelangelo that they had nearly reached their destination. The master had been asleep, dreaming of a stone carving similar to the Pietà, one huge piece of work from one single block of rock. He chiselled away at the white marble, smoothing it with the sweat of his hand and blowing the dust away as he used his mallet to hammer the stone into the shapes and lines he desired. Occasionally, he would get frustrated with the lines and correct them, going over and over the same area until it was just how he wanted it to be. He was a perfectionist, and he got irritated with himself, but never the stone, when things did not turn out the way he wanted them to. This form was a male shape, masculine and strong, with a muscular quality to the arms he was carving, cradling something that looked like a young woman, or a young man, lovingly into his embrace. A kiss was offered as the head bowed down into the rest of the piece, an image he was sure he had seen before, and which brought him pleasure, the more he considered it. A work in progress, perhaps. Roberto's dogs now ran out to greet the new arrivals, and there was quite the scramble as all the dogs chased around each other and sniffed away as an embarrassing ensemble. Roberto whistled to his dogs to come under his command, while Rosa and Luna ran back to Francesca for protection. Giuseppe's dogs just ran off into the distance to find their own way home. Maria was at the doorway to greet them, especially Michelangelo.
My friend, it is so good to see you. I hear you've been having a hard time of it with the Medici family. Here, you will be safe. Come and see. I framed the poem you wrote for me. It looks splendid. Welcome, Maria.
Maria lifted up the framed poem, the beauty of which had upset Francesca so much a few days earlier, but which was Maria's pride and joy.
I will write some more poems while I'm here, I promise. I feel inspired to do so just looking around at this wonderful landscape, said Signor Buonarroti.
The elevated position of the farmhouse offered a spectacular view over the dreamy, now misty Tuscan landscape as the afternoon sun created a shimmering haze of light that spread across the whole valley back down towards Florence. The dark shadows now cast by the trees stood like statues to mark the way they had just travelled, and the grey and yellow stone houses with the colourful terracotta roofs dotted the green and earth-brown valley floor. It was a mystical, spiritual landscape to observe that fed the soul and refreshed the spirit. As Francesca observed it from her position on the cart, she decided that she would have to come out into the countryside more often, to breathe in the air, to gaze upon the cascading valleys beneath her,
and to taste their delights and to refresh her humanity. This was her real spiritual home. This is where she belonged.
Chapter 47. Having left David at the mercy of the overexcited women at the life drawing class, Isabella returned home to deal with the dogs, leave a key with the neighbour to come to let them out over the next couple of days, and then get herself ready for the late evening train to Milan for the Bob Dylan concert the next day. Mia had booked the tickets, and so everything should have been planned, but she needed to check because she had had a busy few days, and she had not given this event the attention it deserved. "Mia, darling," Isabella said as she called her, "is everything okay for this evening? Have you got all the tickets and the hotel details?"
"Darling, relax. Everything is fine. Everything is sorted. The agent is going to meet us at the hotel, and he'll talk us through the arrangements for the interview with Bob. Are you excited?"
Excited, thought Isabella, was an understatement. She had been vibrating for weeks, thinking about this opportunity to be with Bob in the same place, in touching distance. Even the out-of-the-blue excitement with David couldn't quite compare. Bob was something else. He had been a constant in her life for so long, ever since she heard the song Blowing in the Wind, years ago. She was hooked from that moment on, and she never wanted to be released from the hold that Bob had over her. She was devoted, even obsessed, but she didn't care. She really loved him, his spirit and his soul. A little more relaxed after her talk with Mia, Isabella now had a new panic. What to wear for the interview with Bob? She wanted to strike the perfect tone. Set the perfect image. She wondered if he would notice what she was wearing, but decided that he most certainly would. He seemed to have a love and understanding of women which was subtle, but profound. She wanted to reflect that in everything to do with the opportunity to be with him. To be with him. She couldn't believe that she now had the chance to even think that, let alone do it. She decided to work from home for the day, to busy herself with what was needed to be done, so that she could afford to have 2 nights away from home, and to keep up with everything that was going on in her life. The old job. The new job. David. What was he going to be to her? And Luigi. Why couldn't she forget about him, and consign him to history? What hold did he have over her? It didn't help that he, too, was a total Dylan devotee as well. She just hoped against hope that he would not be making the trip to Milan with Mia. That would be too much to bear, on so many counts. Time crawled until she was able to shut down her computer, come offline, and get ready for the trip to the station. She had decided to travel casually, but to take her favourite, gorgeous red skirt to change into for when she was with her muse. As for all Italians when travelling, casually still looked very classy, as she donned a pair of tight-fitting, shapely trousers, her white pumps and a thin cotton top with her Levi jacket. She looked beautiful, as ever, as she checked herself in the mirror before going through the door. "Bye, house," she whispered as she left, a habit she had had for a long time, but she didn't know why. Mia was actually waiting for her at the station with paper rather than electronic tickets for once, and the pair settled into the carriage for the journey north. The high-speed train was expected to be there in less than 2 hours. At each part of their journey, the anticipation seemed to just grow and grow. Grabbing her ticket from Mia, boarding the train, finding their seats, enjoying drinks on board, even passing through Bologna seemed to hold a significance to her. As they got closer and closer to Milan, Isabella could feel her chest tightening. Mia could see how anxious Isabella was becoming. "Relax, darling, relax. You're here to enjoy yourself, not make yourself ill," calmed Mia. "I'll be okay when we get to the hotel." She wasn't. When they left the station to wait for their taxi, a violent thunderstorm erupted. What if this somehow caused the concert to be cancelled? What would she do then? So near but so far away from being with her muse, she drew the meaning between the two words and thought about how few people made the connection between them. One was drawn from the other, and vice versa. There was no sleep for either of them that night. They had decided to share a room to have more fun together on their trip, but Mia realised by midnight that she had made a mistake. Isabella was a nervous wreck.
It's today, Mia. It's today. That's when I'll finally get to meet him. Not just see him, but meet him. I can't believe it.
Today will never come if you don't go to sleep. Didn't your mum ever tell you that? Now be still and go to sleep, please, my dear. We've got a busy day ahead, silenced Mia.
Chapter 48. The golden Tuscan fields of wheat greeted the morning sun as it crept over the hills to the east. Michelangelo Buonarroti stirred in his deep, comfortable bed and stretched out his arm above his head in a delighted celebration of freedom. He looked around the half-dark room in grey shadow, spotting items which he recognised from the night before. The strong wooden door with the heavy iron bolt, but with enough splits in the thick wood to let in some light, air, and free-spirited mice. The pail of water at the side of the bed, ready for his morning wash and his borrowed clothes, hung over a stretch of rope in the corner of the stonework, which made up the majority of the small but comfortable farm building, which was to be his home for the next period. It was some distance from the farmhouse, but he knew that Roberto and Maria would send for him when morning chores were required. Only when the animals were fed would humans claim their breakfast. There were pigs on the farm, as evidenced by the smell still emanating from Michelangelo's clothes. Some cows, donkeys, geese, and ducks, but not sheep from what he had seen or heard. There was movement outside the building which encouraged him to get up and get dressed. It was Giuseppe, the farmhand, come to get Michelangelo to show him how the milking was to be done. The more he looked as though he knew what he was doing on the farm, the better the subterfuge.
"How did you sleep, master?" inquired Giuseppe. "Quite well, quite well. It is a while since I had a proper bed. I think I could have stayed there for a few more hours," replied Michelangelo.
"I'm sure you could, but there is work to be done," shouted Giuseppe, as he carried on with his day's labours. "No time for idle chit-chat."
Michelangelo followed him down towards the main farm buildings and Roberto and Maria's house. He could see the movement of the cows towards the milking parlour and a young woman already busy milking the first of the bovine arrivals.
"Here, sire, you take this stool and start milking this one. Just watch what she does, and do the same," were Giuseppe's complete instructions. Michelangelo set to his task with limited success at first. The girl, whose name at this stage he did not know, had to leave her position to show him how it was done.
"You have to grab hard, harder than you think, and tug it like this, to make the milk flow," she said. Michelangelo followed her instructions and seemed to have more success. The sight of the sculptor-turned-milkmaid was one to behold as Maria came out to see why there was such a long line of cows still waiting to be milked, when she thought the task should have been nearly finished.
"Oh, it's the new farmhand," she laughed as she gave Michelangelo a wry smile and waved at him as a form of informal morning greeting. Later, as they began having their breakfast, the group of farm workers sat around the heavy wooden kitchen table, reflecting on the previous day's trip to the big city for Roberto and Giuseppe, and planning their workload for the coming week.
"We fetched a good price for that sow," said Roberto. "We should think where we might invest those funds, as the city merchants keep telling us there's more trouble coming with Venice, and even Naples. I don't know why they can't just all agree to work together in trade, rather than keep fighting with each other."
"That's how they make their money," said Michelangelo, "through warring with each other. Even Leonardo da Vinci made good money designing military equipment for them. Some of his inventions did not work, but he still got paid for them. And some of them did work, and he got paid very handsomely for those too."
There was a hint of jealousy in his voice as he spoke about his predecessor. He had certainly accumulated greater wealth than Michelangelo, most of whose money had been spent on his family members and friends, and not on himself. Francesca now joined them from upstairs.
"You must have slept very well, my dear," called Maria from the back of the kitchen. "Come and have some food if the men have left you any. They are as greedy as the pigs."
"There's plenty here, woman," called Roberto as Francesca sat down next to Michelangelo.
"How did you sleep, Signor Buonarroti?" she inquired.
"Perfectly well," he said. "I was very comfortable indeed."
Hams and cheeses were passed around the table, followed by drinks of water and fresh fruit from the orange trees and the apple orchards. Maria had been up before dawn, baking the bread that was now being cut and shared across the table.
no one was left hungry. Okay, today we must build a new fence stretching across the back of the top field. Michelangelo, would you like to help me with that? Do you feel strong enough? Asked Roberto. Indeed, Roberto, I'll be delighted to help you, replied Signor Buonarroti.
Francesca, what are your plans? Asked Michelangelo.
Well, I really must get back to Florence before I am missed at work. Signor Facchetti is due back from Bologna today, and he will expect a full report of my activities over the past week while he has been away, replied Francesca.
We will miss you, my dear. You have been so helpful. How will you travel back to the city?
I will walk and try to see if there's a cart along the way which might carry me, but not one full of pigs, she laughed.
Then you must leave soon, child, before the day gets too hot, insisted Roberto.
Maria, can you please prepare Francesca some food for the journey and some water?
Francesca looked at Michelangelo in his new surroundings and felt him to be at peace, compared to the anxious look he wore on his face all the time he was hiding beneath the Medici chapel.
You will be safe here, Michelangelo. No one will think to come to look for you here, she said. Within a few minutes, Francesca had finished her food, packed up her few belongings into a sack, and was ready to depart, thanking Maria for the food and water she supplied her with.
My dear Michelangelo, this is where I must leave you. I will miss you too, but I will come to see you every week until this matter is resolved. I will speak with the church this week and get them to support you. I'm sure they will want you to continue to work for them, reassured Francesca.
Francesca, travel safely and do not make trouble with the Medici family. Remain calm and do not disturb yourself with trying to help me further. You have done enough, said Michelangelo.
Francesca walked slowly away from the farm, Rosa and Luna obediently walking either side of her for protection as she took off on the long journey back to the city, leaving behind her muse and master, hoping that he would be indeed safe in Fiesole.